Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
What is going on, Diesel Nation? We're excited to have you guys with us today on the Diesel Podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube and aren't subscribed, make sure and hit the subscribe button, turn on notifications, like and comment. Let us know what you think of the episode. If there's a particular guest you'd like to hear from or a topic covered, we're always checking comments on there and love to be able to take what you guys are asking for and get on a podcast. On today's episode, I'm going to be joined by Tom. He owns Crazy Diesel, and he wanted to chat with us a bit about his EPA experience with a visit he had, emissions, the future of diesel trucks. We're going to chat with him about his business, how he started it, and really just kind of get a look into the front lines of what a diesel shop owner is facing today with parts that they can get working on trucks, and some really good insights as far as what kind of performance is out there for trucks that are equipped with DPFs, EGRs, emissions on tuning, things like that. Before we get to it though, I want to remind you guys that if you're in the market for a knife, our friends over at Kershaw Knives have a 20% off site-wide code for you. Just use Diesel20 at kershaw.kiausa.com. You can get 20% off anything. So if you need a knife for EDC or hunting, fishing, the outdoors, they've got you covered. And there's a ton of different pricing levels. So no matter what your budget is, what you're looking for, they've got something there for you. All right, let's get to today's podcast with Tom from Crazy Diesel and chatting with him about his shop, emissions, what he's seeing, what the future may hold for diesel trucks, EVs, ton of different topics. Tom, welcome to the Diesel Podcast. I'm excited to chat with you today. I appreciate you reaching out to talk about, your life as a diesel shop owner, things you're seeing in the marketplace, things that are, kind of coming up in automotive that I know everyone's going to be really interested to hear about. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Let's start out with a little bit about your shop and, kind of your background, when you started it, and what you focus on, what it's been like owning a diesel shop.
Okay. So, basically I started out, working on automotive when I was about 12 years old. My dad was a master mechanic. My stepdad was a master mechanic also. They both owned shops. Oh, sorry. So anyways, here, let me readjust that. All right. So anyways, like I said, my dad and both my dad and my stepdad were both master mechanics. They both had their own diesel shops. I basically started off as a floor sweeper and doing maintenance and stuff like that on light duty all the way up to duty diesels. And then, by the time I was 17, I was, diagnosing and, fixing the rigs and everything else. So, and then ended up enlisting in the Army, and I actually wasn't doing any mechanics while I was in. I did go to UAA and get my diesel tech certification towards the end of me getting out, and then I got out and then moved to New Mexico and became a firefighter and EMT and medical examiner for a few years, and then got tired of all that, and so I decided that, it's time to put the tools back in and get back to it. And nobody in my community really does like anything diesel specific or anything heavy duty or anything like that. So I knew that there was definitely a market for it because, most people were having to go down to Las Cruces or up to Albuquerque or El Paso or something like that. So that made things a whole lot easier for everybody else as well. So, and I opened Royal Auto and Diesel Services about, I want to say almost 2 years ago. And it's been a learning experience as far as, running the business and everything, but I've talked to a lot of the shop owners in our area and whatnot, and they say that they're blown away with the amount of progress we've made and everything, and we're still growing and whatnot, so very, very excited for that. So, and we've had some hiccups along the way, but nothing that I don't think anyone else has ever experienced.
And when you opened the shop, was it just like crazy all of a sudden because of the lack of repair shops that were there, where it's just a whole bunch of customers right away? Or did you have to really be proactive with marketing it and saying, hey, here's my shop? And
So what happened was is there wasn't a whole lot of shop spaces that were available when I first opened my shop, and so we basically had like a little shop that was in a little bodunk area of town that people were having a hard time finding it, even if I had signs all over the place and whatnot. So we had to get really proactive, but once the wheels started spinning, I mean they just kept getting faster and faster, and I mean we've moved to a different location now, and we're actually getting ready to get our second location in town because we're getting so much of the heavy duty stuff that we're actually going to need a bigger shop to, maintain those guys as well.
That's
So,
cool.
yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations. I know it's hard to,
Thank you.
start a business and then to have it, grow and get to a second location is quite an accomplishment.
Oh, yeah.
With the pickup truck side, are you seeing a lot of kind of equally like Ford, Ram, GM, or is it, kind of two brands or one brand, or what do you see on the pickup truck side?
I'm seeing a lot more. I'm seeing a lot more Power Stroke and a lot more Cummins recently. Sometimes we'll get like the 7.3s and the 6.0s all at once, and then we'll get a bunch of 6.7s, and then we'll get some common rail 5.9s, and then we'll get some 24-valve 5.9s, and then we'll get a bunch of Duramaxes all at once. So it's kind of how it goes sometimes. But right now, we're kind of going through more of a heavy duty deal going on right now. Like I've got six or seven semis just parked out in front right now. So,
Yeah, I just did
and
a
like four of them are insurance jobs, which those things take forever to do because you gotta send in the estimate. Then they like to try to estimate their stuff extremely cheap, and it's like, no, that $6,000 estimate, that's just going to cover just the parts. So, yeah.
I just did an episode about, big rig semi trucks, and I was really curious because I don't know a lot about it and I haven't really covered it on the podcast. But one of the questions I'd asked the guest was kind of about older ones like pre-07 and the newer ones. So the ones you're seeing at the shop, are they newer trucks, or are they the older ones? You kind of
Yeah, I
split.
think. Well, I think our oldest one right now is a 97, but other than that, I mean, everything that we have is like 2010 and newer. So, actually, we have one 2010, and the rest are like 2020s. And then we actually had to do a road call today on a 22 Volvo, because the way how Volvo made their boot clamps for their intercoolers, they just keep falling right off.
Oh,
So,
wow. Is
yeah.
it, how would you say the emission systems are on the newer trucks, like compared to pickup trucks? Are they, kind of my perception is they've gotten better with pickup trucks and they're not as problematic as like the early, 7.5, 08s, 9s.
Oh
And
yeah.
while they're not perfect, they're better. Is it kind of the same thing on the semi truck side?
Yeah. I mean, we get our occasional DPF clogs and whatnot, and sometimes we're able to catch it before it gets too bad, and we can actually clean it out ourselves. Or if it's too bad, then we'll end up sending it off down to El Paso to get cleared out and everything. So with the de definitely with the DPFs and the emissions and whatnot, I would say they are getting better as the years progress and everything. I mean, like for example, your 6.0s and your Cummins and whatnot, the earlier years for those, I mean, those, yeah, those were a nightmare for a lot of people.
Oh
So.
yeah, it kind of segues into, I think, a topic that generates a lot of interest with diesel enthusiasts, which is the emission systems and the changing aftermarket and the
Right.
performance side. And you're on the front lines of it.
Oh, yeah.
What are you seeing with? I mean, I know there's a push for emissions compliant tuning and hard parts, and then EVs are huge now with, trucks. And can there be an EV semi and this whole kind of competition in the market. What do you see? What are your thoughts on it?
Well, as far as like, the push for more emissions and whatnot, for, lowering emissions and whatnot. I mean, I understand things to an extent on that. And like I did say earlier, I do think that emissions is getting better as far as like, manufacturing the DPFs and EGRs and whatnot. But I do think that some of the things, like, for example, EV, I think that's obviously, you know, if you see what's going on in California, where they're telling people, you know, hey, we don't have the amount of electricity for you guys to be charging your vehicles. You know, you need to get a generator with an internal combustion engine. Well, that totally defeats the purpose and whatnot. So, we actually had someone recently come by with a EV4 truck, and he was just trying to show it to us and whatnot. Like, you know, nothing, he wasn't needing any repairs or anything like that. He's actually a friend of the shop. And, you know, we were looking through the manual and stuff and saying stuff like, you know, you can't have an overhead camper, you can't tow, you know, over this weight capacity and whatnot. And, you know, plus it also takes forever for, you know, these EVs to charge, you know. And if we're doing all EV semi trucks and whatnot, well, if those wheels aren't rolling, those companies aren't making money.
Yeah.
And, you know, for to spend, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, you know, filling up fuel compared to hours charging, I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it seems like there's, well, there is a push for it, but it doesn't feel like the technology is quite there to achieve this grand scale that the push is wanting to do. Like, I can imagine there will be a point where charging times are down, where range is better, where you can tow heavier, but it's not right now. And, right. You know, you mentioned a really good point about if the wheels aren't moving, the company's not making money. And that's really important. It's important all the time, especially now with, you know, the economy and things going on with, you know, the value of money and things like that. Is people are having to really manage things. And it's just like, it feels like it's maybe 15 years out or 10 years. And that's not even covering the infrastructure part of it, of where are we going to get the energy from? What if we have 20 million EVs on the road, or 50 million or 100 million? Where are we going to get the power from? Where are they going to charge at?
Exactly. And the other thing that really concerns me too is, like, for example, Los Angeles Fire, they have an EV fire truck. Well, you know, someone that is a firefighter and that knows how things go, you know, that's not a good thing, because, you know, that truck can be on a scene for anywhere from 2 hours to 18 hours. And, you know, and that truck's running the entire time. What's going to happen when, you know, it's dealing with some catastrophic disaster or something like that? Oh, yeah. Well, we have to pull this resource off the line because we have to go charge our truck. And so, you know, that fire, you know, the people of that community are losing that resource now.
Yeah. Well, it kind of reminds me of the stories I've just read. I don't know a whole lot about it. I've just, you know, read it in articles and stuff about emergency vehicles with DPFs, and when they would get clogged or something like that, and they go into fail safe mode. It's like, if you have, you know, somebody got to take to the hospital, or, you know, something on scene, and you have first and fourth gear or something like that, that's an issue. And
right,
it's just, it just feels like we're putting the cart before the horse a bit with the EV stuff, where I do understand the appeal of it, you know, a couple of different ways. Like, if you lived in a huge city or something, and, you know, they have the charging stations, and it's a smaller vehicle if you want it to park, or performance. Like, Tesla has some great things, and I know Porsche and BMW and other places working on some really fast vehicles. But as far as like a pickup truck and how they're used, it's just, I'm not seeing how it adds up right now.
Right. And then, you know, also, especially with, like, the EV Hummer,
yeah.
You know, they're showing that, you know, going through creeks and whatnot, but, you know, you about what's going on in Florida with all these EV vehicles with the Hurricane Ian that just came through. These vehicles are just igniting. They're catching on fire because they've been flooded and everything. Tow companies are having to, you know, put them all in a separate yard because they're just blowing up. And, you know, when those things blow up, you can't just spray water on it or spray some foam on it or anything. You know, you just got to sit there and basically watch it burn.
I saw some pictures from that, and I think the article was talking about just how much water is needed to try to fight one of those fires compared to something, you know, that's an internal combustion engine. And just,
right,
the safety hazard it is when a place gets flooded like that. It was crazy to see it and read about.
Right. And then, you know, and the thing that worries me about that is, you know, a lot of these flood vehicles, they end up getting auctioned off and then they get sent all over the country. And, you know, these dealers, they don't tell you, oh, hey, by the way, this Tesla was a flood vehicle. Well, what if, you know, down the line, they find out the hard way that, oh, yeah, this was a flood vehicle. I mean, that can kill somebody for all we know.
Yeah, or, so, you know, just to affect a lot. And do you think there will be, or one of the things that I've started to research a little bit is diesel electric kind of hybrid technology. And I think there's a company in Canada that's working on something. And I wonder if that's almost kind of a bridge to, you know, maybe being able to help diesel trucks or be able to offer them some things, but not quite go full EV yet. Because, I mean, we've seen the reports of like the Lightning and the towing rating and how, right. I don't know if you go 86 miles or 83 or whatever it was, but right. A lot of people buy trucks to do that. They're towing something, they're hauling something. And
we have the largest lake in the state here. And I mean, summer rolls around, you're seeing people, they're towing, you know, 35 foot camper with a side by side right behind it and everything. And they're coming from El Paso, Albuquerque, Tucson. You know, they're not going to be able to make it here if they got a, you know, a Ford Lightning or anything like that. Yeah. But honestly, and, you know, we all know, or if anybody knows, you know, what, you know, the original diesel engine was made run off of, which was peanut oil, vegetable oil, stuff like that. Honestly, I think if we want to reduce emissions, I think it'd be a great idea to start researching into that and seeing, you know, how much lower emissions we can get if we were to go back to that program, or if we were to go back into, like, you know, running things off of vegetable oil and whatnot. Because, and if you think about it too, you know, that would also boost the economy drastically, especially, you know, with the farming and whatnot, because there's going to be a higher demand for these vegetables. There's, you know, there's going to be a need for more mechanics as far as, you know, their tractors and whatnot, computer programming, you know, to program, you know, your John Deere tractor and whatnot. So I think, honestly, that the best way to go about it would try to see, you know, look into what can we do as far as, like, you know, running off of, like, something like vegetable oil.
Yeah, some of the alternate fuels, you know, that are out there. And I think the technology as well that the OEMs can provide, you know, can help a lot as well. Because one of the things that I talk about a lot on the podcast is every enthusiast I talk to, when I ask them, well, why'd you get a diesel? It's for a few reasons, and they can vary in the order that people say it, but it's the longevity of the engine, the torque, the mileage they can get towing something or hauling something compared to a gas vehicle. And once DPFs and EGRs were coming on these trucks, it was like, well, you've taken away my longevity, my reliability. Yeah, I have a lot of torque. And we think of, you know, power and torque now, it's insane what the new ones come with. But the technology Right. has gotten better to where they're not always having O2 sensor issues, or you're not clogging the DPF all the time. And so I think the technology Right. aspect is something I really look forward to, is just seeing what the OEMs are going to be able to provide. And then the aftermarket complements it. And there's so many products now that, whether it's right. tuning, turbos, fuel systems, injectors, lift pumps, that complement the OEM truck really well to, you know, give those guys more power if they want it.
All right. So, and, you know, I get my occasional guy that comes in with a deleted truck, and, if it's like a 6.0 that's been deleted, yeah, we can work on it. We can, you know, get it back up and running and everything the way it's supposed to. But, you know, like, I had one guy, he came in the other day, he had a 6.7 completely deleted and everything, and he's having fuel rail issues. He's having EGR codes being thrown left and right. And, you know, I asked him, I said, well, you know, who deleted your truck? And he's like, I got a kid off the internet and they sent me this and this is what's going on. And I'm like, so you kind of got like one of those fly by night companies. And he's just kind of like, yeah. So, because a lot of times, you know, if someone comes to me with a deleted truck and they're having issues like that, a lot of times I'm saying, well, we have, you know, a couple different options. One, we can go back to stock, or two, you take this back to whoever did your delete. So, and it's kind of tricky though to kind of, you know, when you're working on stuff like that, because you know that I've had a run-in with the EPA and it was very brief and very minor, but you know, one wrong move and I could have, you know, it could have shut me down for good, especially with how early I am in this.
Yeah, it's definitely a different marketplace with it compared to how it used to be as far as getting, you know, reliable tuning. I hear a lot of issues with what is currently out there as it pertains to that stuff, because the guys who have been in it a long time, they don't do it anymore. They've transitioned to, you know, emissions on, that kind of stuff. And it's just, you're kind of on your own a little bit, you know, with it. Plus, like you mentioned, at the shop level, you have to be careful what you're working on, what you're able to do, some things you can't help with. And yeah, you just got to say, I can't help you. And I know that's not fun to tell a customer, a potential customer, that, but that's the climate that we're in right now.
Right. And I mean, like, I had one guy, you know, he brought in his Ford F-150 gasser, and, you know, he's all like, well, hey, man, I was just wondering, like, could you take the cats off? Like, I just want the cats off. And I'm like, no, man. Like, I can't, I don't even want to do that because, you know, I don't even know, I don't know who this guy is. Yeah. You know, he might be working for the EPA. It might be his thing operation. He might go and tell his friends, and, you know, then his friends tell their friends, and the next thing you know, it's all over the place. And then I'm getting another visit from the EPA.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I've had guests tell me that, you know, where it's, there's just a different set of rules. But I think what's been really encouraging is to see how the aftermarket has responded. And I know it hasn't been quick, but what's, you know, the 49 or 50 state, you know, legal or you know, tested products that are out there for tuning turbos, injectors, injection pumps, tons of different things, where at one point there really wasn't a lot of that. It was just, you know, you couldn't keep it all stock and run these parts, but now you can. And so I think that definitely gives some options for guys out there that you know, are happy with their trucks, but need a little bit more, or need better EGT control, and, you know, just be able to use their trucks how they're using them.
Right. And, you know, like the companies that we deal with, you know, as far as diesel performance goes, like XTB, Full Force Diesel, those guys, I mean, they're all, you know, EPA compliant. And, you know, that's why I deal with those companies, is because, you know, I don't want to order a set of injectors, or, you know, order an exhaust set or something like that. And then, oh, hey, by the way, that's not EPA compliant. Here's a $100,000 fine. By the way, you're a felon now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, so. I wanted to ask you more about that, because I've seen and had guests on that have talked about going through that process, like for their injectors or for their turbo. How much has that changed what, you know, you can offer a customer? So like, you know, somebody comes in, say I walk in and I go, hey, I got this 2018 6.7 Cummins. I want, you know, a set of injectors and a turbo and, you know, a tune. Are there only like two or three or five places you could reach out to, where maybe in the past there was like 20 or 30 places that, you know, you could get parts from?
I would say, you know, your main guys like Extreme Diesel, Full Force, you know, the bigger names out there. I mean, there's plenty that you can get, and plenty of horsepower you can get from those guys. And, you know, like, the way that I see how it's going right now is that the market is definitely getting better as far as that. Obviously, California has their own set of rules and everything. You know, you can't send off a, you know, they don't do tuners or anything like that. Like, if I have a customer that comes in and says, hey, you know, I want more power for my truck, I want a set of injectors, or, you know, I want a turbo or something like that. You know, I'll sit down with them. I'll say, okay, well, what's your goals? Like, are you looking to like go hit the racetrack? Is this going to be a strictly racing vehicle, or, you know, is this, you know, just a daily driver? Are you towing, you know? And then from there we go, or yeah, we go from there. So like, you know, I'll, you know, recommend them like, okay, well, if, you know, you're looking for a little bit more giddy up and go for your daily driver, then, you know, maybe we should go with, you know, a set of these injectors with this turbo. And, you know, this is a tuner that I would recommend. Oh, by the way, I see you don't have any gauges or anything. Maybe we should also throw in a set of gauges, or, you know, like an Edge CTS or something like that. So that's.
I think one of the things that's trickled down to it too, is I had Lenny Reed on from Dynamite Diesel, and he was talking about the process of him going through testing of injectors, say like on a 6-7 Cummins, and what they've learned trying to get more power out of those trucks within the framework of emissions. They can take some of the things they've learned and apply that towards a VP44 truck or 5.9 common rail, and just how much the quality and the precision has increased on the older trucks, where they're kind of getting a bump too in some of the innovation and the precision that a lot of companies have learned through the emissions testing process.
Oh, definitely. And you know, I totally see, you know, engines like the 7.3, the 12 valve, and, you know, the 24 valve, you know, those are still going to be around for quite a while. I mean, yes, they are slowly coming off the road and whatnot as years go on, but I do see that, you know, those are going to be around for quite a while.
Yeah.
Unless the government decides, you know what, screw it. You know, these don't have DPFs, they're illegal.
Do you, what are some common upgrades that you see people wanting to do on the newer trucks? Is it to do like emissions on tuning? They're just looking for, you know, 3 or 4 power levels to choose from. Or is it fuel systems? Is it trying to avoid maybe potential issues like with a CP4 where they're, you know, wanting additives and maybe, you know, a disaster prevention kit? And what are some common stuff that people are doing on their newer trucks?
I'm definitely seeing a lot of disaster prevention kits. Also, as far as like, you know, when it comes to down to like, you know, performance and whatnot, definitely seen a lot of injectors, definitely seen a lot of turbos as well. Anytime that somebody gets a set of injectors or a turbo or something like that, you know, I always recommend some sort of monitoring system for them as well, or, you know, a tuner or something like that. Definitely if they get injectors, I always try to recommend a tuner. Yeah, for like your 7.3s, your 6.0s, your, you know, 24 valves, and, you know, basically anything that's not all mechanical.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So. This is a question I just thought of, and it's something I've seen pop up like on our YouTube comments or our Discord. Is it'll be from somebody who's really interested in starting their own diesel shop somewhere, and somebody had asked how much or where do I learn to be able to really diagnose things like with a scan tool, or just be able to figure out what the problem is, because in the past it was, oh, you're having issues with your DPF, there's a kit you can buy to solve that, or your EGR, where now that's not the case. So what would you advise somebody that they don't have a shop yet, but they're thinking about starting one, and they're wanting to know, how do I learn all I can about just diagnosing and figuring out what's going on with one of the sensors or the DPF or the EGR or something going on with the emission systems?
You know, one thing I always take advantage of big time is seminars and classes that, you know, just come up. Like, we recently just went over a Cummins diagnostic course, and it talked so much on DPFs and EGRs. And I mean, I thought I knew everything when it came to those, and there was just a lot more that I was like, holy crap, what is this? So I'm always picking up other people's brains and whatnot as well. You know, like I talked to some of these guys that have been wrenching for, 40 years, and they're still, working at the dealership and whatnot. And, I'll sit there and talk with them, and, we'll exchange information and whatnot. And, we start picking each other's brains and everything. I would definitely say that a lot of people are, I would say that if you're getting ready to open a shop, don't be afraid to talk to, the other people, the other shops in your community. I was personally worried about that when I first started my shop. Like, oh great, these guys are all going to try to compete against me and whatnot. And actually, we all work together, minus maybe like one or two other shops, but we're always, hey, we're having this issue. I know you work on a lot of these a lot. What do you know about this? And when our smaller shops in town get, a diesel in, I'm normally the first person they call, like, hey, we got this going on. What's, shed some light on it. And it's like, give me 15 minutes. I'll be right down there. So
with the growth that you've had, I'm really curious about this as well. Has it been hard to manage growing so quickly, whether it's with like your team or the space or like the accounting? It seems like a lot. Like, you get used to a workload and then you're growing and growing and you need help and you need to get, techs and office people in. What's it been like growing your team and your space to be able to expand the way that you have?
I mean, I could be in a bigger shop in a bigger city right now if I wanted to, but I know personally, I'm not ready for that. At first, like when the wheels really started spinning and everything, like we were going full speed, no brakes, nothing, And nowadays, I've learned to, kind of tap on the brakes and, hey, wait a minute, we're not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
So, but to be honest, it's probably, besides firefighting and being in the military and all that stuff, I would say this is probably one of the funnest experiences of my life.
It's really cool because it involves so many different things. Like you talked about learning, networking, absorbing information, staying on top of all the changes that are happening, new products, customer service. We've talked with shop owners before about billing and, billing the right way, making sure that, you're staying profitable, keeping your shop open so that customer has a place to come back to. And just that whole it always fascinates because there's so many different sides of it, and it applies to other things. It applies to construction companies, real estate. It can even apply to a truck build, because a lot of times, you said, sometimes you gotta, pump on the brakes a little bit. It could be the same thing with a build where we just want to jump in right away, but are we really ready to have the truck down this long, or should we stop and invest more into the engine while it's out now, and or the transmission? And so there's a lot of topics that overlap there.
Oh yeah, definitely. I just bought a 99 F-250 with a 7.3 in it, and I was getting ready to pull the motor and have the truck down for probably 3 or 4 months, and then I'd look over at the in the corner of the shop, and I'm like, oh wait a minute, I got a 7.3 sitting right there. We're just gonna go ahead and build that, and then when that's all set, ready to go, it's got the new turbo, all the new injectors and everything, we'll just throw that puppy in there. And it's gonna be a weekend thing, but you guys are gonna hate overtime. I would definitely say, as a piece of advice for people that are going into that's or wanting to open their own shop and whatnot, I would definitely learn to say no and do not chase the bottom of the barrel. Because, I see on a lot of forums with new shop owners, and I was this guy when I first started, I wanted to be the lowest price guy in town, saying yes to every single job and whatnot. And, I realized that I was doing more harm to myself than I was doing good. Yes, I, maybe for the first couple of few months, maybe have your rates lower than everybody else. That way people are starting to know who you are and whatnot. But I would definitely say, you know, maybe the first 3 months, and then, you know, put your rates where you belong. You know, I have an excellent group of guys that work for me. You know, one of my guys, I mean, hell, I can put him against anybody in this county and he'll work circles around him all day. And, you know, I'm very, very fortunate to have the team that I have right now. And there's been a lot of, you know, I've had to make a lot of tough choices as well as, you know, building my team and whatnot. I've had, you know, I've brought guys on and, you know, they were doing stellar. And then, you know, a couple months later, it's like, hey man, it's not working out. You know, I got to let you go. And, you know, wish you the best. And, you know, I hope you do good. If you need anything, give me a call. The other thing I would definitely say is I don't know if I said this, but don't be afraid to say no. You know, I get a lot of customers that come in, or I wouldn't say a lot, but I get that occasional customer that comes in and, you know, we're sitting there talking and everything, and I can tell this guy is going to be nothing but a headache. And it's like, you know what? I don't think I can help you. So, and there's some customers that I've brought in and, you know, we start working on their stuff and yeah, they're calling us every 15 minutes, wanting an update and everything. And then finally you get their vehicle out the door and, you know, hey man, if anything happens to the vehicle, call me. And then they say, oh, well, my 2004 Excursion or, you know, whatever is acting up. And it's like, I don't have time for that. So, you know, definitely learn how to say no to a customer. Because, and, you know, I think people, especially like, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 30 years old, but, you know, like growing up in the 90s and the early 2000s, everything, you know, we always learned that the customer's always right. Well, you know, and I especially, you know, after, you know, the pandemic and everything, I've seen a lot of, you know, that phrase, the customer's always right, is actually being phased out in a way.
Yeah, it's something where, you know, I think of that, like, you know, some shops, say, for example, are geared up to do conversions. Like, that's their specialty. That's what they do is, you know, that's just what they, that's what they're really good at. And I can imagine when a, you know, somebody's starting out, they're trying to get business, somebody says, hey, I want to do this Fummins thing. And if it's not your bread and butter, how much time it could take. And the learning curve with it, where maybe they're geared up to do something else. And so I know that that's something that can be a challenge, you know, early on is you know, what's a specialty. There's some shops out there, I know they just build pretty much race vehicles. Other ones, you know, they do maintenance, a little bit of this and that. So I think really finding that niche or what you want to work on, what your guys are set up for, what they like to do, what they're efficient at, can really help them, you know, through that growth processes, you're defining what is it that I exactly want to do.
Right. And I mean, like, yeah, we do work on, you know, we got like 1.4 banger Honda in the shop right now. And honestly, that's probably going to be our last one. You know, if it's not at least a pickup truck, and we're probably not going to work on it, or, you know, a bigger SUV like an Excursion or something like that, because I've learned over the years that, you know, those, you know, or over the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, whatever, that, you know, those little cars and whatnot, they're not our bread and butter. You know, my crew doesn't like being on them. I don't like dealing with them. And, you know, there's plenty of other shops in our area that can handle that, you know, and plus they take up space.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I need my semi-trucks. I need my, you know, my 6.0s, my Cummins, my Duramaxes in there, because, you know, those guys are willing to pay the money for someone that has the experience.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's.
And then plus.
Oh, go ahead.
and then plus, you know, like, It makes things a lot easier on us, because, you know, we don't have to worry about, you know, all these Subarus and Hondas, which I will never touch a Subaru again. My mom owns a Subaru, and that's the only Subaru I work on. And I've been trying to talk her out of getting rid of that thing. But anyways, I could be working on those all day, but they're not going to make me the amount of money that, you know, a 6.7 Power Stroke or, you know, a Detroit diesel or anything like that, you know. And, you know, we also do, you know, a lot of roadside service and whatnot for our customers. But, you know, I've had to, you know, have a customer, you know, I get a customer that calls me and says, you know, hey, my Ford Expedition broke down. Can you come out here and help me? Well, my roadside rates are set up for the truckers, not for people with these little, you know, with these little gassers and whatnot. So, you know, I have to explain to them, well, you know, if I do come out there, this is what's going to cost. And they look at me like, whereas, you know, if I tell a semi trucker, you know, hey, this is what it's going to cost just for me to come out there, you know, with mileage, you know, plus whatever parts we're going to need or whatever, you know, they're like, get out here. I need you now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that probably streamlines the shop a lot too. If you're doing, you know, Cummins Duramax Power Stroke, the way you can structure the parts and the fluids, the things you're going through on a weekly basis probably makes it more efficient as well with the team there and just getting vehicles in and out and back on the road.
Oh yeah. So yeah. And yeah, I'm really surprised with, you know, how well we've taken off, because, you know, when I told people what I was planning on doing, they were like, nobody here is going to want to, you know, have a bunch of horsepower crammed in their Duramax or their Cummins and whatnot. And it's like, man, now I get like 75-year-old guys that are like, hey, I need a set of injectors. So, you know, it's not just, you know, the younger generation like us. No, you're getting those older guys coming in there saying like, hey, I'm getting ready to take this thing out to, you know, or I'm getting ready to take my RV across the country. You know, what can you guys do to just make it a lot more efficient?
Yeah.
So
what kept you going when, you know, people would say that to you early on, like, oh, it's not going to work, or you're not going to, you know, get these kind of people that want to come in and spend this money? Was it perseverance? Was it a team? Was it a mentor? Maybe all the above, where, you know, when people are saying this isn't going to work and you made it work, what would you attribute that to?
I would definitely say I'm hard-headed. You know, people will tell me like, that's not going to work. And it's like, tell me why it's not going to work. I don't like that answer. Okay, we're going to go for it. And, you know, there's been a lot of things that I've tried to do and I failed. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're not going to try. We're going to still try to get the same result, but we're not going to try doing it that way. So, you know, like, and there's been times where I've been at the shop, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting there by myself thinking to myself, like, I can shut my doors right now for good and never come back to this place. But then I'm going to tell her every single day after that, I'm going to be telling myself, you're an idiot for doing that. So, and you know, when I had the EPA visit, that's honestly what I was thinking about doing. I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here. And, you know, I got all my guys together and I said, look, man, I don't know what's going to happen. I am considering shutting this place down. And one of my guys just kind of looked at me like I was an idiot and like, really? Come on, man. You think a couple government guys are going to, you know, shut this whole operation down? Like, come on, man. So, and actually, I do want to hit on that whole EPA deal that I went through, because, and I know you know about it and whatnot. But yeah, so what's my shop? Or yeah, doing the whole morning thing and whatnot. And these guys, they roll up in a SUV And, you know, they're saying, hey, we're with the EPA. We're here to do an audit. And, you know, they all they handed me was just a couple business cards. And, you know, they were government and all that. And, you know, they wanted to search my shop. They wanted to, you know, go over my customer records, my financial records, all that stuff. And I was like, well, I don't see a court order, so I'm not going to let you guys come in here. And when you guys decide that you guys want to come back with one, then sure, I'll let you guys go through it all. And honestly, that was the scariest moment of my life, I would definitely say. And that's when I pulled everybody together and I said, this is what happened. I don't know what's going to happen after this, you know, from what the EPA just told me, they can lock us out of the shop and keep everything that, you know, we've all worked hard for. So they ended up coming back with a, I'm not sure if it was a warrant or a court order, but basically, you know, I had no choice. And, you know, they had to step out of the shop and everything. And they went through the shop, but they were only in there for like 5-10 minutes or maybe 15 minutes max. And I mean, I already had everything printed out. Like I had called my attorney and everything before they came back. And, you know, he just said, just make sure you have everything ready to go because they're probably going to show up. So I did find out though, that it was a anonymous complaint, which I think it was from a government organization that we actually had to file a lawsuit against for fixing their vehicle. Because they basically told us that if we wanted to get paid, we would have to sue them.
Wow. So,
which they ended up paying us outside of court, but I think it was more of a retaliation thing.
It's crazy how that can happen or be used in a way where, you know, I'm sure you showed up that day, had a list of things to work on, and then, you know, when an agency shows up and says, hey, we want to check this out. And we've all heard about it. I've had them on the podcast. They, you know, there's places that have talked about it in magazines and YouTube videos. You know, it's scary because it's so large and it can be intense. And it's just like, that's how easy it is, you know?
And you don't even know, like, you know, you could be in violation and not even know it. Yeah. The only two things that they were concerned about, they asked me, they're like, what's up with this exhaust piping you got sitting here? And I was like, well, we do exhaust work for semi trucks and whatnot. So, you know, we have exhaust piping here ready to go. And then they also, they touched briefly on, they saw our 30 pound AC bottle our R134A bottle. But they didn't see an AC machine. They're like, this is in compliance. And I actually had to show them a work order like, hey, it's actually out getting repaired right now. We're not in AC season. So we're probably not even going to be working on ACs anytime soon. So those are like the only two things they asked about. And as far as like our customers and whatnot, I've reached out to a bunch of our customers and, you know, I've asked them like, hey, did you get a phone call or anything from an agency or anything like that, and they've all told me no. So I do think that there was a attempt, or I think they tried to do a sting operation on me when I first opened up though, because they had two separate Duramaxes come in, and they were both having emissions issues. The first guy, he was just low on dev, and behind, you know, just told him, I was like, well, that's all you got going on. And he's like, well, I wish there was a way that we could, you know, just delete the whole thing. And I was like, yeah, that's illegal and I'm not going to do that. So, you know, he went on his way. The second guy though, like he pulled up and he was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm having this issue and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I plug in the scanner and everything and I scan it and I'm like, oh, it looks like you're having some O2 sensor issues. Let's go ahead and crawl into there and take a look at them. And you can tell it was blatantly unplugged. And I mean, this guy was like bugging me hardcore, like, oh, well, what about emissions delete? Do you do them? Oh, come on. You know, you know, you can easily do this. And he's like, do you have a phone number for anybody that does them? And it was just weird. And like, they both had the same story that they were traveling from El Paso up to Albuquerque, and they just so happened to, you know, have these issues in this town. Well, about 3 or 4 weeks later, I found out that a shop or another diesel shop a couple hours away from here had got popped for doing emissions leads. And I was actually talking to one of my buddies that was working at that shop. And he was like, yeah, this guy rolled up and, you know, was having issues with his Duramax. And, you know, it was a simple fix. And he asked if we could do it. And so I was like, well, thank God.
Yeah. So it's definitely a different kind of environment, but that's good. Those are good insights for, you know, somebody who's starting out there and, you know, may not know what the climate's like, is just understand. And also truck owners as well. Like, you know, shops are under pressure. Companies are under pressure. There's rules they have to follow. And so, you know, it's just a framework you guys got to operate under, because we've had other guests on that have gone through that process and they have gone through the court proceedings and everything else. And it's a nightmare. So, you know, I think that's good insight.
Yeah. And, you know, it's coming down to the end user now also. I mean, you're hearing about people in these different states that, you know, they're posting their truck up for sale and everything. And, you know, someone goes out there and looks at it. And the next thing you know, they get something in the mail saying like, oh, hey, by the way, your registration's suspended. And, you know, you can't drive your truck. You can't sell it until you put the emission stuff back on. So, and, you know, they might have just bought that truck like that. So yeah. I think as the years go on and as emissions, you know, progresses and everything, at least the technology, you know, I think that they will, you know, people will be looking at those deleted trucks as value, so to say. I mean, you know, people are like, oh yeah, my truck's deleted. Yeah, it's easily worth the $40,000, you know, stuff that you're seeing on Facebook Marketplace and whatnot. So
yeah, we've heard stories about that as well, as far as dealerships and selling, you know, vehicles. And that's a whole kind of topic, you know, in itself, is how that's changed. So what the end user can sell or what a dealership's willing to take or not take, it definitely affects that, you know, that side of it. So it's definitely changing a lot. And I think, you know, a lot of things you talked about on here with, you know, EVs and, you know, building your business and some of the pressures and the EPA visit. I love doing these episodes because you guys are on the front lines of seeing everything, and people are genuinely curious. They want to know what those visits are like, or what you can get, or what they can expect if they go to a diesel shop. Like, what can I do to my, you know, 2022 or 2020 truck and everything. So I appreciate you reaching out to us, sharing your story. Yeah. I wanted to have people be able to follow you on Instagram or Facebook. Where can they go and see what you're working on? We subscribe to you. I've seen your videos and stuff. They're cool. What you guys got in the shop?
Instagram is crazed_diesel. I also have a link there for, pretty sure it's Royal_Auto and Diesel. And then our Facebook page is Royal Auto and Diesel Services LLC. We do ship nationwide. If it's available through XCP and Full Force and, you know, Rough Country and whatnot, I mean, we can definitely get it for you. You know, and I love doing package deals with people and whatnot, you know, building relationships with people all over this country and whatnot. So there, you know, and we're slowly growing on that part. You know, a lot of people, especially nowadays with, like, you know, the issues going on, like, you know, people are getting scammed and whatnot for diesel parts and whatnot. So, you know, we have to, you know, basically build everybody's trust with that. So,
yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's
so, far, so good.
Yeah, well, like I said, I appreciate you messaging us and chatting with us about what you did. And I encourage people to go over, follow you, ask questions. Maybe they want to know something about the shop or building their truck, or maybe their semi truck. And, yeah, so like I said, I appreciate you reaching out. I enjoyed our chat today. And yeah, you know, keep us updated. Let us know. Let us know about your growth, your business, and things you guys are seeing.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it was great talking to you also.
Don't forget, Diesel fans, make sure and head on over to kershaw.kiausa.com. Use code DIESEL20 for 20% off site-wide if you're in the market for a knife. They've got a ton of different knives, so whether you're an enthusiast or you need something to really work hard, throw in a toolbox, something around the house, or hunting or fishing, they've got something for everybody. And we really appreciate our friends over there offering this discount code just to Diesel Podcast listeners. Also want to give a shout-out to Tyler Lowen of 23 Diesel, Caleb, our Patreon supporters, all the rest of our Patreon supporters, all of you who are watching on YouTube, podcast apps, we appreciate your support over the years. We love to hear from you guys. If you're not on our Discord, make sure and jump on there. There's almost 700 hardcore Diesel Podcast fans that are on there. We're always chatting about truck builds, cool things we're working on, getting advice from people who may have built a truck a certain way, and we're gonna, you know, we want to get similar results. So we're chatting about turbos and injectors and tuning and transmissions and just getting a lot of great ideas. So I'd love to see you over there. Until next time, keep the shiny side up.